This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
Welcome to Discovery After Show, the Star Trek Discovery Analysis and Speculation Podcast.
Discovery is ours. Today will be her maiden voyage.
Every week we break down the story, talk about the good and the bad, do a little nitpicking, and discuss our theories of what's to come.
We have a duty to perform, and we will not accept a no-win scenario.
And now, here are your hosts, Sean Ray, Rick Tatrow, Virginia Pickle, and John Irons.
I talk when I'm nervous.
Hidden.
From the historic Cosmic Potato Studios, welcome to Discovery After Show. My name is Sean Ray, and tonight we will be discussing the 14th and final episode of Star Trek Discovery's second season, which was titled Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. It was written by Michelle Paradise, Jeannie Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman, and it was directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. And joining me tonight to do the breakdown is, first of all, the host of Captain Game Show, Mr. John Irons. How's it going, sir?
It's going great. Thank you.
I don't know what's so funny, but... and
I didn't expect to be first.
I try to change things up. Yeah. The co-host of Wait You've Never Seen, Virginia Pickle. How are you?
I'm a little sad. This is the last time we'll talk about Discovery for a while.
Yeah, I know. Blah, blah. And the master of ceremonies over on the Infinite Diversity Podcast Network, Mr. Rick Tatrow. How's it going, sir?
Hechluk mit kak jajvam.
John, you were wrong. John had money on get off my ass, sir. Get off my ass, sir.
There goes my intro.
And speak of the devil, the host of the soon-to-come relaunch of The Prime Duration, Scott Madison. How's it going?
I'm going to say it anyway. Get off my ass, Sean.
And we have a special guest tonight. If you've seen the comic strip recasts that I've been recaps that I've been sharing all season, those come from a website called Super Anemic, and they are created by Nick Yeager, and she is joining us on the show tonight. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I have to give you a standing ovation. Oh, a standing ovation.
Podcast ovation.
Yeah, I love those recaps. They are hilarious. How'd you get started doing that?
I don't really remember why I started. Honestly, I was probably just looking for content for my blog. And so when I heard that Discovery was going to be a new show, I was apprehensive at first because I'd gotten to a point in my life where I was like, no more Star Trek. I hated the reboot movies. And I was like, we are now living in a time where Star Trek just doesn't make sense because we're too savvy in terms of knowing how real science works. And so I was like, no, let it die. And I was like, I'm going to make funny recaps about the show. And lo and behold, I love Discovery. I love it. I love it more than I like Deep Space Nine. So I do the recaps still in like a humorous, snarky way, but I do love the show. And there are a lot of haters out there, but what I hate is when people reading the recaps think I'm a hater, because I assure you the recaps are done with love. I love the show.
Oh, that definitely comes through.
And you don't just do Discovery.
Well, you can tell.
Yeah, you've got some... You've got some Next Generation recaps and stuff like that on your blog too, right?
Yeah, so I did the first season of Enterprise, which is to say I did one recap for all of the first season of Enterprise, and I've done a couple episodes of Next Generation, and I just started today doing the original series, so look forward to that.
Cool.
Nice.
Now,
I don't know if any of y'all are maybe, well, I don't know if old enough is the right word. Back when Voyager was on and the internet was in its infancy, there was a guy, and I forget his name, who he had a blog called Delta Blues, and he did weekly reviews of Voyager episodes. Mm-hmm. And they started off pretty straightforward, but then just gradually became funnier and funnier as things went on. And I was wondering if any of y'all had seen any of that, because your strip really reminds me of that type of, we love the show, but there's just so many ludicrous things in it we're gonna point out because they're fun.
Right, exactly. I haven't seen that, but indeed, my aim is to snark on it from a loving place. Yeah.
I love how you can take the animosity between characters and just get it down to just, you're a poop. All right, I'm going to read the plot summary for this. Whoa, where'd that echo come from? It's gone now. Okay.
You didn't have to stop.
I want to make sure it wasn't me. Okay, I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb for this episode. And it is as follows. The USS Discovery battles against Control in a fight not only for their lives but for the future, with a little help from some unexpected friends. Spock and Burnham discern vital new conditions between the red signals, while Burnham faces one of life's harshest truths. The right decisions are often the hardest to make. So...
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
What show did they watch?
Yeah. We'll get into that. So, we're going to go around the table, the virtual table here, and we're going to give a spoiler-free review of what we thought of this episode. I'm going to go first this time. Okay. I had a huge smile on my face. This entire episode, I had a smile on my face when I watched it on Thursday, had a smile on my face when I rewatched it on Sunday. The episode was bananas. It's the space battle was the biggest thing that I remember ever seeing in a Star Trek episode. The character stuff I loved. You know, the final scenes that we got between Michael and Spock, I thought they were well done. The Culber and Stamets scene I thought was really well done. All that character stuff was pretty on point. But the plot was wonky. The motivations that they had for doing some stuff, I didn't think that they were there. The danger that they were trying to make us feel kind of fizzled out. The decisions that they made were based on the fact that they were reading a different script than what we were watching. but I did enjoy the episode. I'm going to give this episode probably a B+, because just the space stuff. I almost want to give it an A just on the space stuff, because I thought the battle scenes were awesome. But yeah, the plot part of the episode was just a little off to me. And I'll get into why when we get into the spoiler filled stuff. So, Neek, what'd you think of this episode?
I loved it. I thought it was a great finale and a good setup for season 3. But I will say that my reaction to this episode is sort of the opposite of my typical reaction to a Discovery episode. So usually when I watch Discovery, I'm so overwhelmed by what I first see because it's so fast-paced and I'm so old I can't keep up. And so when I watch it for the second time, I watch it very slowly and I'm constantly pausing and rewinding and really analyzing it. And it's at that point that I come to really appreciate what the writers are doing, and I like it more after that. But in this episode, I loved it on the first watch. I was so into it. It was visually gorgeous, and I thought the story held up as well. But then when I rewatched it, and I was actually nervous about the recap because I was like, well, there's nothing to snark on. It was so good. But then rewatching it, I was like, oh, no, there's plenty to snark on. I saw all the plot holes and I was like, this is ridiculous. And there's a couple things that really disappointed me, which is not to say I didn't like it. I still thought it was a really good episode. Mm-hmm. But I did become more critical after watching it for the second time.
Yeah. I think it took me 2 hours to watch it the second time because I kept rewinding and pausing to make some notes and going back. Scott, what about you? What'd you think?
Well, thinking back to the previous episode, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1, and one of the prevailing opinions that I think most of us had talking about that one was it's really kind of on the slow side. There's a lot of goodbyes. There's a lot of let's just really hang out in the emotional space and there wasn't a whole lot of action going on in that episode. And we assumed that they were front-loading all the emotion in part one so they could bring the action in part two. And brother, were we right. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That episode, with the exception of the, you know, of the epilogue and the conclusion scene, that thing was at a sprint for like 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare for us to see that much constant action in a Star Trek episode. That made it fun. That made it quite a ride. The first time. I watched it the second time, and that's when a lot of the flaws started to come through. And I never like saying this, but honestly, I enjoyed it less the second time through. I still liked it, and it's still Star Trek, but it was a lot easier to see some of the issues that a person could take with the episode going through the second time. But overall, still really liked the episode. I liked how they constructed the story. I didn't like some of the plot gymnastics. And while the space battles were very impressive, there was plenty about them that I didn't like, and I'll get to that as we discuss it more fully. But overall, like Neek said, a very satisfying season finale, and I really, really am excited for the setup for season three.
This is the longest episode of the season, too. I think it was like 55 minutes, and they're usually more like 42, 43 minutes.
It was 65.
It was like 65, 66.
Okay. Virginia, what about you? What'd you think?
I actually enjoyed this episode more the second time I watched it. It was the first time I watched it, it was a whole lot to take in all at once. So when I watched it the second time, a few things became clearer to me. Like, for example, the battle scene and all of the graphics and everything, I really appreciated they did it because they can do it now, whereas they couldn't do this, you know, in 1966 or whatever. But me personally, like, my eyes literally could not follow what was happening. Like, it was so much happening. Even the second time, I was like, I think that's Michael. I'm not sure. But I understand that's probably just me. And I really, like, especially the, well, we'll get into all of that. But, and even though the end was kind of heavy-handed and the, like, okay, we told you we were going to do this, and here we are doing it, I still like that they did it. So it's like, okay, haters, shut the hell up.
All right. Rick, what about you?
Virginia, what you just said, I just got this picture of Tawny Madison. I've got one thing to do. It's stupid, but I'm going to do it. you know, my feelings about the peril from last week have not changed. It was way, way, way contrived. You know, it could have been solved with just a line here or there that the spore drive was offline for some reason, so they couldn't jump away from Leland. You know, they're like, Leland's going to find us. Well, you can jump to the other side of the galaxy in a heartbeat where it'll take him, you know, 70,000 years to find you. I think that's enough time to strategize. You don't have to do all of this stuff with a, you know, a 30-second countdown.
Well, didn't they say in the last episode that the spore drive is going to be off?
Because they were using the energy to charge the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
But if they jumped away, then they would have years to figure out how to charge the crystal without debilitating their spore drive. That, you know, and I'm much light, going much easier on this episode today than I was before I guessed it on the Disco Trek over at the Tricorder Transmissions, because I was that guy on the show. Everybody was loving it, and I was like, well, grouse, 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 gripe, gripe. And they're like, oh, you're overthinking it. Just enjoy it. I was like, well, all right.
Not you, Rick.
Not me, no. I never do that. There were some things that I really, really, really loved. Squeezed a tear or two out during some of the moments in this show. I really liked Nan's character, but now I love her. This, you know, just her whole attitude when she and Georgiou teamed up. I want a buddy cop movie with those two now.
I hated that. Oh.
And I also want to get a just like a Thelma and Louise-esque, maybe not as depressing, adventure movie with Poe and Jayla from Star Trek Beyond.
That would be pretty awesome.
But, you know, overall, I liked it. I don't know what it is with the writers, because they do some things so well. You know, they wrote Pike so beautifully in this whole season, where, you know, we have to create this legend. You know, he has to live up to the reputation, but they did it in a way that kept him human. It wasn't like, you know, I'm Captain Pike, haha, aren't I wonderful? It was, you know, they created a guy that you would follow to the ends of the universe and jeopardize your career to get him, you know, to Talos IV and all this stuff. But then they do something like this where they just can't stick the landing. And we'll, you know, we'll go into the details of it as we go on. You know, it didn't ruin it for me. It just was kind of like, all right, I dig that we've got to get the ship out of here because canon and all of that stuff. I know some people are well, why are you bowing to all the haters? I don't think it's that. I think they've been trying to dig themselves out of the hole Brian Fuller left them in for two seasons now, and I think they just finally did it.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see where they're going with it. I just that and the death of a certain character that was totally wasted. That we'll get to eventually.
All right, John, what about you?
I enjoyed it. I'm not going to talk much about it. I'll chime in more when we do the play by play recap. But overall, I agree with all points from everyone. Yes, it was great. Yes, the action was great. Yes, there were some really dumb things that happened. Yes, I still enjoyed it despite the dumb things. And I really want like season 3 to start like next week.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah.
Wish.
Yeah. So it was a great season finale. I mean, the way they set it up, it could have been a series finale, but I'm glad that it's not, obviously.
All right, let's break it down. So the show starts. The Discovery and the Enterprise are preparing for battle against Leland/Control's fleet of hijacked Section 31 ships. The squadron of souped-up shuttles are falling into place. Pike is on the bridge of the Enterprise, and Saru has command of the Discovery. Pike says, "This is Starfleet. Get it done."
I've got to wonder at this point, how long did it take them to completely hollow out the Enterprise's secondary hull to fit all those ships in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, we established this like in the first episode of the season, where we're dealing with infinite space technology. We're dealing with Gallifreyan tech.
Oh, okay.
Something the size of a briefcase can expand to a gravity generator that takes up half the shuttle bay, you know?
Well, so good point.
We can't really call them out on their spatial dynamics.
I got to say that ever since Pike took that time crystal and he saw his future, he has a lot. Sorry, I had to throw my wife a charger. He's got a lot less room for excuses. So, I mean, like, even when Michael said last episode that, you know, going to the future was going to be a one-way trip, there were people that had a problem with that. Pike was like, okay, well, let's do it. You know? So he's like, look, if I'm going to end up a melty face, you know, you guys are going to do what you got to do, too, you know. So, Discovery's 3D, and you guys bust in with, if you have a comment while I'm talking, just bust in. The Discovery's 3D printer is working overtime while, you know, Michael and Stamets and Nan and a few others are quickly working, trying to put an angel suit together like they do it every day. I mean, they're just like, okay, this goes here, this goes here, this goes here. Like they're putting together a puzzle that they've put together 1,000 times. I bought a kitchen table the other day that came in four pieces, and it took me an hour to put it together. I'm just saying.
That's why you're not on the Enterprise.
And you also didn't have Jet Reno yelling at you about trying to kill people with it.
Yeah, I was actually fine with that. Between I completely believe that Burnham, Stamets, and Reno basically memorized the the specs for that. I buy that.
Yeah, it didn't bother me either.
Yeah, there were lots of people who were messing up. forgot what show I was on. I was like, yeah, I'll bleep it later, but no, wait, this isn't my show.
And I'm like, why do they even have those junior officers there? Because the junior officers were just getting in the way. Yeah. Everybody was yelling at them.
Because they had to have everybody. I've been in that situation.
Look me in the eye. Do this. Don't do that. Put that down.
Where the thing is due
in
5 minutes. You got to present in 5 minutes. So you grab everybody you can. Literally everybody you can. That doesn't matter if they... I know you don't know what you're doing. Just hold that there. You don't know what you're doing. Just screw that in. When you're done, come get me, and I'll get you to do something else. I totally relate to that.
I recently had an example at work, and I don't think that I've ever named my employer specifically on the show, so I'm going to go ahead and say this, and hopefully we don't have any listeners that work there because they might not like me saying this. But with our current staff, we'll just say that I work in the security department. I'm a security guard. I work at night, so I wasn't around for this, but during the day, because we can get a bit short-staffed sometimes, and we use some part-time contractors to fill in from time to time, which is why we ended up seeing all 1,400 employees in my facility evacuated outside of the building because there was an erroneous alert saying that there was an active shooter in the building.
Oops.
So I will take a junior officer dropping a piece on the table and saying, oh, bleep, and Michael saying, get off the line, we'll fix it. I'll take that over over the alternative.
Was there an active shooter in the building?
No.
Okay. The story ends that, well.
That Hawaiian nuclear bomb threat that happened.
Oh, God.
Right.
Michael needs to make it to the outer edge of the battle to safely open the wormhole and not pull any of Leland's ships into the future with her. And number one is our everyman because she apparently doesn't understand Detmer's technobabble.
That pissed me off.
I can't blow up after what you're saying. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I was saying man in the all-inclusive sense.
It has been established that number one is like a genius.
Exactly.
And that line, I was like, are you effing kidding me?
Same.
Yeah. Didn't like that.
It was out of character because just last episode she was having all the shuttles outfitted with guns and stuff for no reason. You know, Enterprise didn't know that they were heading into battle when she made the order to put guns on all the shuttles and stuff. But okay, so the next shot is kind of weird. They split the screen three ways between number one and Saru and Detmer, and it looks like something they used to do on Charlie's Angels all the time.
I love that.
Yeah, I hate it.
It was just kind of weird, and it was out of place because they didn't do anything like that again after that.
That's why I loved it.
Yeah.
Never seen it before. Never seen it since. It just seemed hokey to me, and it didn't sit right. It was like when I went to see Ang Lee's Hulk in the theaters alone because no one would go with me, and I understand why now. But to see Ang Lee splitting the screen into four different images, some of them are still images and some are still moving. Because it's like a comic book. Well, this isn't a comic book, so stop it.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. Not the Hulk. The Hulk was terrible. I didn't mind it.
Plus, I watch a lot of anime, and it reminded me of that. It was, to me, it was more of a callback to various other action-y scenes from movies and shows. I didn't have a problem with it at all.
Now, if in this
episode it fit. If it was like a, you know, an overly dramatic or romantic type show episode, then no. But in this case, I felt like it fit fine.
If they had given the characters anime backgrounds, then that would have been fine.
If you notice the wall behind me changing colors rapidly, it's because I've got the episode on in front of me and she's time jumping now. So.
And
That's reflecting back on you.
You keep looking up, and on my screen, Rick is right above you, so it looks like you're looking at him every time he's talking.
You're doing the Brady Bunch thing.
By tickling him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
Lo-fi.
You're going to release this video too, right? So I don't sound like a lunatic.
Yeah, but what you see on the screen is not necessarily what's going to be on the video.
It's fine.
Okay. So Reno is still charging the crystal. Okay, somebody brought this up on the Facebook group last week, and I thought it was interesting. So last week when Reno opened up the whatever you call that case that was around the time crystal, and when she exposed the crystal, she started having those visions, right? Mm-hmm. So is the time crystal one of the prophet orbs from Deep Space Nine? Is that what the orbs are? Is time crystals in a box? So you open the box and you start having visions?
I thought that was interesting, but I'm going to say no. Because you don't... Okay. I had to think about it, but you don't interact with... Like, if you open an orb and you have a vision, you have, like, a conversation. You have a whole, you know... It's a whole process. You don't just see the future.
Yeah, you're talking to the prophets, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You interact with the future and the past and the prophets.
It is not linear.
It is not linear, and it is not. It's the difference between me watching a movie and participating in a play.
Yeah, I can see that, but it could also just be the difference in how they're writing at this time.
Well, it's like, you know, a bass and a trout are both fish. They both do a similar thing, but they aren't the same thing. So there could be
they aren't. I need to change some answers in my...
that's good, Bass. I saw that too, and it was like, oh, maybe. But yeah, they behave differently, but there's no reason why they couldn't be, you know, similar, but not the same thing.
Leland is the only life sign on the Section 31 ships. The rest are all drones, so... I guess he killed everybody. Because, you know, when they found that one ship a couple weeks ago, he had just blown everybody out of the ship, and they were all floating in space. I guess that's what he did with 30 ships worth of people. So there's a lot of dead people floating around in space somewhere. But, yeah, the rest are all drones. And Giorgio says they're nasty ones. Saru quotes The Art of War to Giorgio's surprise. We're starting to see a little bit more. It seems like we're seeing more respect in the banter between Saru and Giorgio. Like, they don't like each other, but they really like to not like each other. I'm surprised that Taryn can be surprised by anything, you know, and then she gives him this little smile, you know, so she sees him as being a little bit more than just lunch.
Well, Giorgio seems to, like, she reminds me a bit of my stepdad, who, like, if he gave you grief, that meant he liked you. If he was nice and polite and friendly to you, that meant you either didn't exist in his world or he didn't care for you at all.
Yeah.
Giorgio seems to be the kind of person, like, if you, like, kick her ass in a fight, you'll be best buds for the rest of your life. So with Saru finally giving her back, she's like, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Neek, what do you think of Giorgio from this season?
Oh, I have thoughts. I think she's a fantastic character. I love her because I love villains. I love a female villain. But I don't like when people get the idea that she can be redeemed, or they're like, oh, she's so awesome. She's so cool. You know, she's going to be part of the good guy team. She's a cannibal. She's a mass murderer. Yes. She's a slave owner. She rapes sex slaves. She's Hitler level evil.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, she's a cool villain, but she's a villain. She cannot be a good guy. She cannot be redeemed in my eyes.
I think they might have gone a little too far with some of that stuff with her, because obviously they're going to try to redeem her because they want her as the main character, or one of the main characters on the Section 31 show that they're going to be doing in a couple of years. But they made her so bad. They made her do such terrible things that, like you said, she can't really be redeemed from a lot of that stuff, but they're obviously going to try to do that. You know,
well, that's it. And yeah. and I like a redemption arc, but I just feel like she's been so evil that how is Burnham being so nice to her? How is Saru being so nice to her? Like, again, she eats Kelpians. Saru would be like, no. Yeah.
Can't it's like, it. You know, John had a theory a few weeks ago that Georgiou, when she was in the Terran universe, that she's actually playing a part. Like, she knows what she has to do to survive, so she's just doing that, and she's not really as evil as what she was portraying to be.
I said that?
You did say that. You don't remember saying that.
No. I'll be talking all kinds of shit, honestly. That makes sense. That sounds good, though. Let's go. Keep going.
Okay, so
if they want to try to redeem the character, then it's going to require a really definitive moment for redemption. I mean, they're going to need to put the character of Terran Georgiou through some type of crucible to really, really have a sea change in her character. They're not going to be able to just, you know, slowly bend the character that she is now into a noble, noble character. I couldn't come up with anything. It's one of those nights. But as it is now, she did all those horrible things as Emperor, and since she got to the Prime Universe, she's been, you know, not terribly different. She still seems to be out for herself as much as she's out to, you know, serve, quote, the greater good. They're going to have to break the character down to nothing and let all the viewers see her, retake an inventory of herself and figure out, you know, what's important in this universe and then decide to be good. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work in order to turn her into a character that viewers can respect. Because right now she's still just, you know, a villain that's playing nice most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. And killing Leland wasn't enough because she did that for her. She didn't do that for them.
Exactly.
But Burnham's mom says that she has seen her sacrifice herself for Burnham countless times. So we know it's in the, you know, according to her, it's in there, and it's just a matter of showing the audience that enough. And maybe she's not, that person yet. We don't know when Dr. Burnham was talking about, but I don't know about redeemed, but I think she can sincerely play for the good guys. I think she can get to the point where it's not an act for survival, where she does consider these people maybe not equals but all part of the same crew, all part of the same team.
Yeah.
Okay, so Leland orders them to give him the sphere data. Georgiou reminds him that he's outnumbered. He says, count again. And then tons and tons and tons of smaller drones start launching from all these Section 31 ships. Saru, I love the look on Saru's face because he looked like he just sharted. he's just like, oh, crap, you know. And then we get exploding consoles and stuff. And we find out where Poe disappeared to last episode. She stole a shuttle, and now she's right under one of Leland's ships, and she tells Pike that the drones can't be defeated one-on-one. They have to be attacked from both sides at once. So, Georgiou wants to let Leland board the ship so she can fight him. You know, like I said, she wants to kill him. And Saru obviously doesn't think that's a very good idea. Stamets gets hurt as they're taking the angel suit down to the shuttle bay, and he gets some falling debris, falls through. Why is there a glass ceiling with just lots and lots of empty space on top of it over this corridor? That's just asking for an accident. OSHA would not like that.
Why is the, you know, okay, I 99% of the stuff they do on Disco I love, hardware wise. Nick, I'm a huge hardware wonk. I've like read the tech manuals, not, you know, like this, that's my I love it. And the first time we saw that ridiculous shot of the turbo lift inside that, you know, carnival atmosphere roller coaster,
yeah,
interstitial area that was the, you know, the
Space Mountain is what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah, only bigger.
Yeah. There's so much empty space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would there be so much space inside the ship?
Yeah, that's where Discovery was hiding all the shuttles.
Yeah. The turbo lift is in a micro universe.
Yeah. You know, I was glad to see that Discovery is, you know, they're staying with the time honored Trek tradition that all Starfleet vessels have walls that are filled with rocks.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And everything explodes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
it explodes in rocks.
Why is there electricity in the railing?
Yeah.
Right. Nothing explodes with glass or with you know, circuitry. It's always rocks.
Yeah.
Rocks, rocks, rocks.
And we did an episode of Cosmic Potato one time where we talked about tropes, especially in sci-fi, and that was one of the things that I came up with, was that why do the consoles always explode on Star Trek? Is like, you would not want to be assigned to a console ever.
Well, to be fair, my computer crashed the other day, and when I hit control alt delete, it blew up. So it is based on some kind of, like, I mean, maybe it's different in the future. It's more explodey. I don't know.
Right.
I called IT. They fixed it. It's fine.
A couple of years ago, my apartment or the power lines near my apartment got struck by lightning, and a surge came through my my cable jack, through the coax cable, and it burned out my Blu-ray player. It burned out another electronic, I can't remember what it was, and it fried the HDMI port on the back of my television. So like 2.5 devices got totally killed by that, and I found myself really glad that I didn't live in Star Trek time, because that would have taken forever to clean up. But here in the real world, it's just, there was no visual evidence of it whatsoever, other than the fact that, oh, my Blu-ray player won't work. I guess I'm never getting that copy of 300 out again. I'm okay with that.
Well, they so they take Stamets to sick bay while Michael and Spock take the suit on to the shuttle bay, and Reno just stays behind. She just says, "I'm going to clean this up," so she just stays in the corridor to clean up. So we get this scene in sick bay, and first of all, the doctor, whose name I can't remember, the lady doctor,
Dr. Pollard.
Yeah, so she's talking to Saru over the intercom and saying, "We need more people down here. You know, we've got lots and lots of injured people." And Saru's like, "We don't have anybody else. Do your best." And she's like, "No, I'm going to do a half-assed job because this is a perfect time to start."
I love her so much.
I love her also.
Yes.
And I'm glad to see she's on the Discovery, because I think we had talked about last time that, was it only the bridge crew that was going with her, or were there other people that just weren't?
Yeah, there.
There were other people who weren't there for the speech because they were doing stuff. But
well, yeah, Tilly made that comment that there's others that are working right now. But yeah, we're all going with you. So
it looks like they have a significant size crew.
Yeah.
Yes.
It looked like just about everybody. Just about everybody's going. Okay, so I would say that Michael puts on the suit. But really, I think the suit puts on Michael.
Yeah.
So,
well, before we go there, this is one of the moments I want to talk about, is the moment between Spock and Michael in the shuttle bay.
Okay.
And when they do the Vulcan salute, and I may have cried a little bit then.
Yeah.
You know, we have watched Burnham and now Spock go through this emotional journey. You know, Burnham for 2 seasons, Spock for you know, half of one, but still, this is, you know, these are one of the, some of the areas that I think the writers are really just knocking it out of the park with. It never felt forced. It never felt anything other than organic. The way, you know, it makes total sense that neither of them are very good at dealing with emotions. So most of Burnham's problems, especially in season one, and then some in season two, and she even said it, you know, come as a result of her being raised the majority of her formative years by Vulcans, you know, by Sarek and her trying to be more like him and suppressing her emotions and stuff. And now she's not very good at dealing with them. And that's kind of been her, what's the word from Aristotle? Tragic flaw. Yeah. You know, is that she goes with her emotions, but she's not very good at dealing with them. So she makes mistakes based on her emotions. And we're seeing Spock's doing the same thing. It's just that her emotions are more of empathy and caring and wanting to help everybody in the known universe. And his is more like, I'm angry, mad Vulcan. And neither of them are very good at dealing with those. So when they came together and kind of healed each other and kind of, you know, got rid of the, I always thought you did. Well, I always thought you did. No, neither of us did. You know, little brother, Vulcan sign, boo-hoo, give me a tissue. I really enjoyed that moment, even though rightfully so, but Discovery has a long tradition of this. You know, we're in the middle of, we've got 35 seconds left. Let's take 10 minutes to talk about this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. They did do that, yes.
I timed it. It was more than a minute Michael and Spock spent there in front of the suit getting ready to put it on. Something that should have taken 10 to 15 seconds to load the crystal and get Michael in the suit. And it took like 75 seconds for them to get that scene going. And it was emotionally, it had the impact. But at the same time, people are literally dying outside. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. And I thought we had taken care of all of the goodbyes and everything in the last episode. That's what the last episode was for. So why are we in the heat of the moment doing it again? I can't remember. Michael and Spock had their own goodbye in the last episode, but if not, they should have put it there.
They had like three goodbyes in this episode, and they were all emotional, and they all worked, but yeah, story-wise, they didn't work.
And
as far as
the
actual scene, they did.
They all happened while crewmates are exploding in the farm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, literally, you can see explosions behind them later in the episode. And like every time there's that little flash, I'm like, Michael, you knew that person. Yeah. Michael, you knew that person too.
We did skip over one thing. I did want to mention the Culburn Stamets scene in sickbay. That was a pretty good scene. So Culburn decided that he's not going to go with the Enterprise. He tells Stamets that, you know, wherever we go from here, you know, we're going together. You know, and it was a good scene because Stamets didn't really say anything. He was really bad hurt. He was impaled, you know, and he was about to be put into a coma so that he wouldn't die, I guess. But yeah, it was a powerful scene. Go ahead, Virginia.
That was another thing too, where he's like, "Okay, I see you're impaled, so I'm going to induce a coma. So I'm going to talk to you for another 60 seconds while I'm inducing the coma."
Well, like, it takes a minute to go on.
And I'm like, how long does it take to induce a freaking coma?
I was fine with that, too.
In the 23rd century, it shouldn't take long. It should just be...
Well, I got the sense that also it was sometimes just easier to say something to a person if you know they can only sort of hear you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I took that as, because he had to basically admit that he had been messing up. Sorry. he'd been messing up, basically, you know, since he got back. Like, it's totally me. I'm so sorry. You know, and apologies can be hard. So sometimes it's nice if the other person just doesn't say anything.
Yeah, I didn't mind him pouring his heart out to Stamets while Stamets is not really with it. But what did bother me about that scene is just that I felt it was rushed. I felt like well, I guess it wasn't really a reconciliation because Stamets didn't say anything. And I felt like in like part one, they're like, we must part, farewell forever. And then, oh no, I love you after all. You're my boo. It's like, I wanted more for a reunion from them too. So I hope in season three, there will be, you know, Stamets will be conscience and they'll be able to talk together, because I don't want them to drop the storyline of Culber being really messed up by the experience he had, because I really like that storyline.
Yeah.
I agree.
On the Next Generation, that would have been 2 minutes at the end of the episode of him getting back on track, and then by the next episode, never happened.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have carryover of that sort of thing, but I did feel it might have happened a little bit quickly. I think it might have been last episode of the podcast where I was talking about how I expected that they would kind of restart the relationship rather than just having their big revelation moment and they rush back into each other's arms and everything's back the way it used to be. I assumed it was going to be something more along the lines of Hugh saying, I don't exactly know who I am or where I am, but I know that there is something between us and I'm not throwing it away, but we need to take it slow. I need to start from the beginning. And then they rebuild their relationship. Now, in this episode, sounds like Hugh decided, you know what, you were right after all. I want to go back to the way things were. But they did handle it in such a way that it wasn't quite as jarring as I expected it would be. I also appreciated the fact that the whole time that Hugh was talking to Stamets, he was still working. They didn't put everything on hold so they could have that conversation. He was still doing his doctor thing while he's talking to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Though I would have laughed my face off if, after Hugh poured out his heart, Stamets, half-conscious, said, "But I'd moved forward."
I'm seeing someone else.
Oh, that's too far, Sean. Come on.
No, I enjoyed that scene because in the last one where they, you know, Culber keeps trying to have these meaningful conversations with Stamets in the middle of like not appropriate times, which I always think is hilarious. But I think that, you know, when they did the, no, you go first. If I think Culber was coming to say that to Hugh or to Paul, but Paul went, okay, you want me to move forward? Now, this is coming from, no, I have done this very same thing. And I don't, you know, maybe, I don't know if it's universal, but you're with somebody and things aren't going well and they're like, well, I think we need to like see other people, or we, you know, this isn't working, or, you know, and so you think they want to hear you say, okay, I'm fine and I'm going on. And so you say, I'm fine and I'm going on, but you're really not, because you think that's what they want to hear. And by telling them what you think they want to hear, you're kind of leaving the door open for maybe reconciliation later. So I think that's what Paul was doing. I don't think he really wanted to leave Hugh at all, but Hugh wanted him to go, so he's like, okay, I'll go through the motions of going and just keep listening off to the edge in case he goes, but wait. Then Hugh was like, oh, okay, well then yeah, I'm going to the Enterprise, see you later.
Yeah.
So I liked this scene. Yes, it was very rushed, but in the context of, oh my god, you might be dying, we all might be dying, let's not die apart. I thought it works. You know, what they do with it from going forward will, you know, color a lot of what I think about this scene. If it's all just, you know, rainbows and kittens when they get to the 33rd century, I'll be a little disappointed with that. I would like to see them, you know, work through, you know, but working together, even if they're not, you know, all puppies and stuff.
Agreed.
The sequence of Michael gliding through space I thought was gorgeous. You know, she gets knocked back one time, and then she says she's okay, and then she continues on, and then the Discovery music swells up. You know, I thought it was pretty good. Leland,
I want to double check, Virginia. That's where you lost sight of Michael, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's everything was spinning, and I'm like, I'm really trying to follow her, but there's things happening. I just couldn't follow.
This would have played a lot better on a movie screen than on a TV screen, but yeah.
I can't remember if this was before or after this part, but when they zoomed out to the shot of the ships shooting at each other, but you could see like the shields, the force fields. I really like that because I'm like, oh, I never really thought about what it would look like. You just are most of the time inside the ship and the captain says, shields up, red alert, or whatever.
Yeah.
To see it from the outside, I was like, huh, that's very cool.
And can I say, Enterprise, blue phaser beams. Yay!
Yep. With the proper sound effects.
With the proper sound effects. Right.
Yeah. Oh, I love the moment. Sound effects.
I enjoyed it. Now, I think the shot that Virginia was talking about just a second ago was where Control was going to make a push to try to deplete Discovery's shields by making a just throwing a huge salvo directly at him. Mm-hmm. So Enterprise moves itself between Control and Discovery. And I really enjoyed that shot because it was one of the few shots of the space battle where the camera just held still for 2 seconds. And we got to see the action. Everything else, they have really thrown themselves 100% into the visual tactic of let's put the camera on one of these shuttles or a drone or, you know, the fastest thing you've ever seen in space. And this camera is just going to go tearing through this battle. It's going to be moving fast and it's going to be looking back and forth one way or the other. It's going to have shaky cam. You're going to get reflection and flare on the lens of the camera, which is going to throw your focus off and you're not going to be able to visually track what's happening. It's so frenetic that you don't really know what's happening in space. You just know there's a lot of explosions and a lot of lights moving around back and forth. And it was really thrown into sharp contrast for me because over the last week leading up to this episode, I caught up on the Orville season 2. Now, I don't love the show. I will say, sorry, Rick, that their second season is a lot better than their first. I'm not saying it's on equal footing with Star Trek. It's, you know, clearly a let's do Star Trek, but in a different way. But they're doing it better this season. And a lot of people on Twitter were talking about the big space battle that they had in a 2-part episode this season.
Yeah.
And how it was, you know, just a really impressive TV space battle. And it truly was. It was an incredibly well done space fight for a show of their apparent budget and style on that network. The graphics were incredible. They were crisp, they were bright, they were colorful, and they held the camera in place and let the action move around it so you could follow it and see what was happening. It kind of hurts to say it, but for this season, the Orville does win for best space battle because this one, while incredibly impressive, it's too hard to follow because they're taking a page from the 2009 Star Trek playbook that when J.J. Abrams put it together, which is just keep everything moving because if it's fast, then it's impressive. Not always. Sometimes you just want to hold things still. Don't, you know, rack the focus or shake the camera around. Just show us what's happening. And it can be easier to follow and it can be more impressive that way.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of the Kelvin timeline influence especially in this season of the show. And I did see some in that battle, you know, when you focus on something far away and it's blurry at first and then they zoom in, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Saw some of that, but
I liked it.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say.
I lost Burnham a couple of times too, but, you know, and you're not wrong about the craziness, but I liked the feel of chaos that such a battle would be. You know, I really enjoyed there is no up, there is no down, because Starfleet battles have always been, you know, and as much as I love Wrath of Khan, and I love the fight between the Enterprise and the Reliant, that's always what it's been. Two ships of the line broadsiding each other and just kind of, you shoot, then I shoot, then you shoot, then I shoot, until someone figures out, hey, we can go down.
Yeah, so, once they broke that code in Deep Space Nine and they started having battles where, you know, where people actually use the Z-axis on a regular basis, that was a good moment when they started doing that. But before that, yeah, they were still fighting like old sailing ships. You're on the same plane just doing this.
I watched Squire of Gothos today. I was just kind of having something on. And they're trying to get away from Terlane's planet. This is a TOS episode, folks, if you're not familiar with it. And at one point, they're trying to get away from Terlane, and they go starboard, they go port, they can't get away. And then finally, Kirk just says, let's go down, you know, and he goes, you know, negative whatever. And so they actually did use the Z-axis. I had forgotten they did that. So,
I'm going to... Okay, so the next couple of things that happen, they kind of happen concurrently, so I'm going to... We'll talk about one, and then we'll talk about the other. So you got one thing that happens is the Michael Spock on the debris, you know, that part. And then you've got the part about the torpedo getting lodged in the Enterprise's hull and Cornwell and all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about... Let's talk about Michael and Spock first. So... She goes to open up the wormhole and she can't because I kind of equated it to a video game. It's like, Michael, you can't go to the next level until you've done all of your side quests. So, because they very obviously said in the last episode, I think it was the last episode, that once she goes to the future, the crystal's going to be burnt out and she's not going to be able to go back into the past again. So she's thinking, I'm going to go into the future, and then I'm going to go back into the past, and I'm going to set all these signals. It's like, why are you thinking that? You know that the crystal's going to burn out. So you have to set the crystals before you go through. I mean, you have to set those signals before you go through. So they did this sequence that I thought kind of dragged out more than it should have, where she goes back through the entire season and sets all the signals. I think they could have shown us one or two of those, and we get the point, you know. But they had to show us all of them, and then replay some of the scenes. I think it was just,
but it was quick. They were quick cuts.
Yeah, I didn't mind
it.
I don't think it was
you're
as
wrong,
quick as
Sean.
You think it, I don't think it was as quick as you think it was. I think it slowed everything down. I think it slowed
compared
the episode
to her goodbyes with Spock. They were quick jumps.
I think you wanted them to be quicker, but I think they were.
No, I'm not saying they weren't quick jumps. I'm just saying that whole sequence put together really slowed the episode down.
But I think the episode needed to be slowed down a bit.
That's true. You did need a break.
Yeah, you need some variance in the pacing in a TV show.
And not, I mean, obviously, but not everybody either does a weekly podcast or listens to a weekly podcast, so they may have needed that, hey, remember when we went to New Eden 12 episodes ago, you know?
Yeah,
I can get that. Okay.
And I had forgotten that if they had mentioned it someplace before, I had completely forgotten that New Eden eventually became Terra Elysium. I phrased that improperly. That Terra Elysium that they visited in the episode New Eden, I had either forgotten or missed entirely the fact that that is Dr. Burnham's home base planet.
Mm-hmm.
I completely forgot that. So this served as a good reminder for me.
Yeah, she very briefly mentioned it in like one of her logs or something, but mm-hmm. It was just like, blink and you'll miss it.
Right.
This is where... Spock puts it all together, right? He puts it all together and he tells Michael that, you know, we've gone to all these different places and we got all the things that we needed, right? Is that then or is this later? All right.
It's after the Klingons and the Ba'ul come in, that's when he puts it all together.
Right. And this is that scene, right?
Yeah, this is when that happens, yeah.
Okay. Then I will take, I will sip my tea and take my props because I called it like the second or third episode. Weather Dominator, G.I. Joe. Because everybody's like, well, what are the? And I think it was the third. I think it was actually when they went to New Eden, and they got the log. I was like, okay, so every place that they go, they get something, and it's like they're getting something.
You did say that.
And it was like they're getting something for it, and I thought it was for Discovery, because we didn't know about the time suit yet. But they were getting every little piece that they needed to complete this ultimate design. Weather Dominator called it.
I owe you an unspoken apology, because when you said that, I don't think I said it out loud, but I was like, that is so not happening. So I you were right, and I was very wrong about that.
Yeah. Well, once again, it did remind me of this is kind of Bill and Ted leaving the keys behind.
trash can!
Yeah, because, you know, Michael has to go back in time to set signals for herself so that she can come to the future so she can go back and set signals for herself. You know, that's very confusing.
But that's the kind of, because we've been having this debate too, like, that's the kind of time travel that you like, where if it happened, it must have happened. So that works out for you.
Yeah, it's just
predestination paradox.
It gets. When you're going in a loop like that, with just one person, that the thing that they did in the past is because of something that they did in the future, and they haven't done it yet, but they have to do it so that they can do it. You know, it gets confusing at that point. But
we know that Michael had to go back in time and set all these signals so Discovery would know where to go to get what they needed so they could create Serpentor. Exactly. We got that by the end of the season.
I did put in my just notes Saru says, well, when you create the wormhole, we're having trouble seeing you. How are we going to follow you? And she says, I'll set another signal. And I'm like, just fly towards that giant white light.
A big rip in space-time.
Yeah.
It's definitely the epitome of a you can't miss it, Saru.
Yeah, it's right there. So then
sensors have trouble following you. Open a window.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe it's the radiation energy scrambling the signals or whatever. Sure, fine, whatever.
You gonna say something, Virginia?
As sort of a sidetrack here, how did Serana know how to pilot a shuttle? Like, how much time has passed? I think we were all Saru there, where he's like, "You know how to pilot a shuttle?" Like,
I love that line.
But I have a lot of questions.
I think they had him say that precisely so we could just be like, okay, just go with it.
Yeah. That's what I was kind of thinking, but I didn't know if maybe I had missed something, like a lot more time had passed or something. I don't know.
It's been a few months, but it hasn't been long enough for her to master piloting a fighter. But
Kelpians are geniuses. They've been oppressed, but they're all super bright.
And now technology, the ship basically flies itself.
You know how many times I played the pod racing scene in the Star Wars video game, and I still crashed the ship every single time.
Are you a Kelpian though?
I might be.
Not that it entirely mattered, because after Serana said, "Warriors of Kaminar, do this and that, and let's fly this way," and that is the end of their part in this episode.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. This is I don't know if this is Kurtzman. I'm inclined to put this on him, because if you look at the JJ movies, and if you look at JJ's Star Wars movies, now I don't think Kurtzman had anything to do with those, but he still, you know, he worked closely with JJ. They don't sweat things like how close things are together or how long it takes to do any particular given thing. You know, everyone can see the Starkiller base blowing up planets, whether they're in the same solar system or not. And so we get some of that here. And this is one of the things that I kind of go, well, all right, we have to accept that Discovery needs to appeal to the people who were brought in through the JJ movies. If it's going to survive. I know that we would love to think that, you know, we fans are all Star Trek needs, but it isn't. We need, you know, they need to bring a lot more people in. And I don't like it. I don't like it when they do silly crap like that. But sometimes you have to go, all right, there's a roller coaster inside the goddamn ship, whatever.
That's that voice. I love that voice.
Okay, so the Klingons and the Bowel showed up, and Pike is talking to Laurel on the view screen. And I have to bring this up because I saw it online, and then I didn't believe it, and I went back and watched the scene again. Pike says that the cavalry showed up just in the nick of time. It's not the it's the cavalry. Cavalry, yes. And Calvary are two different things. Calvary is the day where Jesus died. So he says the Calvary showed up just in the nick of time.
But well, somebody sabotaged his script.
Yeah. See, I thought it was maybe because I saw it online and I was like, well, they just put the wrong thing in the subtitles. No, if you go back and watch it, that's what he says. He says the cavalry showed up just in the nick of time. So,
Sean, don't tell him how to say the line. It sickens him.
Yeah. I have a question here, too. Is Ash is on the Klingon ship, but all the Klingons are supposed to think he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how's that happening?
Here's what I got. On this ship, these are the most loyal of the loyal. This is her ship, so they know, and nobody else knows.
So they're all going to keep the secret?
I guess, but he really shouldn't be shouting orders and shit. I mean, he really could have just...
That's it. He wasn't even standing back. He's like, you do this, do that. Excuse me? Like, who are you?
You know what I took it as is that this ship is full of Klingon warriors who are finally getting to do what they love to do, and they don't really give a rat's ass about the politics. Now, if there were members of the High Council or whatever on there going, hey, he's supposed to be dead... You know, and there may be repercussions later that we'll never see.
Yeah, I'll buy that, but it's just reckless.
I think that they might
not care about the politics, but they get drunk and they're telling their awesome war story.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think he really expected to survive the battle. You know, he thought this was going to be it. But
cloak and dagger isn't something Klingons really think about. You know, it's all battle and honor and glory and singing the songs and dying and you know, kak jajvam and all that stuff. So it, you know, I have heard the same things online. I was like, hey, aren't they supposed to not know he's alive? And then I was like, you know what? It's a good day to die. They'll deal with untangling the political mess later.
All right, let's talk about
I love when they said that, by the way.
I love Laurel. I think if this is probably going to be the last we see of her, at least for quite a while, maybe ever. And this was a hell of a scene for Mary Chifo to go out on.
I think she tweeted or something. She basically said her farewell and like, you know, I hope to play this character again at some point. But you got the sense that this, as far as she knows right now, she's done.
She'll be on the Section 31 show eventually. I mean, Ash has got his career, so.
But that's 2 years from now, so.
And it's not like they I was about to say they have a kid. Well, they really don't have a kid. Like, there's no.
He's grown. You
know, yeah, he's all grown. They missed it.
Let's talk about the torpedo. Let's get through the end torpedo. Of the episode because we've got this game that we have to play to for our giveaway this week. So the torpedo is lodged in the hull, and they can't turn it off. They can't get rid of it. They can't close the blast door. So number one and Cornwell go down there and they're trying to turn it off and they can't do it. So basically Cornwell just says, okay, I'm going to close the blast door from the inside. And you go out there. She's talking to Pike. You go out there and I'm going to sacrifice myself. Pike's like, no, I'll do it. And it's like she knows that he's got a future that he has a destiny that he has to do or whatever, you know. So so Cornwell, that's what she does. She closes the blast door from the inside. The thing blows up, and the only thing between Pike and this ginormous explosion is like this much metal and a window.
That's some gray glass.
Yeah, so, I mean,
some blast door glass.
Yeah, it's
probably transparent aluminum, but still.
If the blast door was not there, then it would destroy the entire ship. But this 1 4-foot wide piece of metal is gonna save everybody, and he's just standing there.
Before you even go there, I have a huge issue with this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, y'all know I am basically the chief engineer of my theater, so I know how everything works in my theater. Number one and Pike should know how every system in their ship at least have a working knowledge of it. Okay. And if one blast door has a manual override on one side, they all do. That should have been the first thing they checked instead of fiddling around with the torpedo for 15 minutes, and then Cornwell, who this may only be her third time ever setting foot on a Constitution class, goes, "Hey, what's that lever do?" It was, again, it was so contrived, it pulled me right out of it. You know, and all they had to say was, the transporter's not working. Because all they had, bring it down, beam her out. Done. Yeah. Nobody dies. You know, I dig that they wanted to give Cornwell an impressive send-off, you know, a noble sacrifice. That's groovy, but don't do it in such a ham-fisted way that it's totally wasted.
I agree with you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I agree completely. Yeah, I didn't like that.
I wish that they had dropped the line of why they couldn't use the transporter or something.
All they had to say was, we can't get a lock. There's interference from the torpedo or something, you know?
You know what, though? At this point, I just kind of bake that in. There's going to be two things during every Discovery episode that are stupid. But you can headcanon it easily. They just don't.
Yeah.
And Rick, you called my attention to this like 5-6 episodes ago. It was like all they had to do was a line. And I was like, well, but they don't need a line. If you can do it, what did I do it for? No, they're making the show. You are right. I will give you that. Like, you gave me one, I will give you one. You were completely right. And not that they necessarily owe it to the fans, that I don't necessarily subscribe to that. But, and that's why I say I bake it in. Like, there are some parts of the show where the writing is exquisite. And there are some parts of the show where the writing is not. And it's like they're doing this juggling act. And they like, if they've got, what's the line? You can have it fast, good, or cheap. I mean, you have two of the three.
You get two of the three, yeah. Like, I have that on my office in my network.
there's some Discovery equivalent where they can't get the emotion, the Star Trek science, and the action all, like you can get two of the three, but you, like, to have them all in one episode is where they're really hitting on all cylinders is rare, and it's a tough thing to do. I mean, that's why they got the phrase.
Yeah.
But I mean, I didn't think about it until you said it. Like, why didn't they just beam her out? Yeah, why didn't they just beam her out? Because that's one of the two things. That's one of the two dumb things this week.
Well, but it's not even so much about, like, oh, it's dumb that she died in this particular way. It's that her death was ultimately meaningless.
No, that's what I mean.
The character just gets short shrift, and it sucks. It's unfair.
I think because effectively no major person died. I figured they felt like, it's the big fight. It's the big finish. Somebody has to die, just because show, as Chris would say, because show. Somebody's got to die, and for whatever reason they picked her, and for whatever reason they did it that way. But and that's what I'm saying. It somebody didn't have to die. Frankly,
well,
they killed lots of people. It didn't have to be somebody. It didn't have to be Cornwell. It didn't have to be anybody. But they felt like it was, and so that's how they did it. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Cornwell because she's
awesome.
Outside of Kirk himself, which I don't really, you know, he was an admiral for a little while, but I don't. She's the best admiral we've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't. You know, she stumbled a little bit, sure, during the war, but that, you know, she wasn't a quote unquote badmiral. You know, she wasn't coming on board, being an asshole, taking over, making stupid decisions and stuff. She was a smart, competent, awesome character, and just it was just such a waste to throw her away like that.
Yeah.
Can All right. I take one? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
One more sidetrack is, although it didn't say it in the closed captioning, it sounded like Pike said to number one, take the con, Una.
Yep.
And I wondered if y'all had heard that and what y'all think about it.
They confirmed it.
Canon sort of situation.
Her name is officially Una. The closed captioning didn't get it. Actually, it depends on what you were watching. Some closed captioning didn't get it at all. Some closed captioning said, I think the Netflix closed captioning in the UK called her Nuna. But yeah, he said, I'm leaving the con with you, Una. So, even though later on in the episode when she's being interrogated, they kind of make it seem like she says her name is number one. You know,
she, that was funny.
Yeah, but she, but yeah, her name is officially Una, which it was already Una in a lot of the novels, so they were just kind of making that canon. So, okay, so Michael opens the wormhole, and Discovery follows her through. And then in the meantime, we've got this whole Giorgio and Leland fight going on.
Inception corridor.
Man, I will watch Michelle Yeoh kick ass all day, every day, eating my popcorn. I don't even care.
She tricks him into the spore cube and magnetizes it, and he dies. I mean, he falls apart. He dies. And number one tells Pike, the ships are dead in the water. You know, they stopped because he died. Now, and he still says, blow him up anyway. Okay, so if Leland died and control is neutralized, then why is Discovery still heading for that wormhole?
It's like, and not only that,
yeah.
Stop, you don't have to go.
You want to make it even better. Control, Giorgio says Leland is dead, control is neutralized. All right, let's continue with our plan to travel to the 33rd century, and while we're at it, make sure that we take these nanobots with us that we've been fighting all season.
Yeah. Yeah, if one of them survives,
just leave them right where they are, and let's take them along with us. Because what could possibly go wrong?
That was the number one gripe, other than Nan saying yum yum. I hated that. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love that. I love that song.
They completely changed. I mean, why? She's turning into Giorgio now. They changed her character into Giorgio Jr.
No, we just haven't seen her
mirror notch.
You don't know her at all.
We haven't had a chance to see her doing her job.
Wanting to take a minute to beat the hell out of the bad guy does not necessarily make you mirror universe space Hitler.
But she bonded so quickly with Giorgio. I mean,
yeah, it was.
Does she know?
Anyway,
Giorgio was altered Giorgio though. Does she
I don't think it's a secret.
Nan wasn't on the ship when they went. Everyone on Discovery that knows about it, but Nan wasn't on Discovery when they went to the universe.
She came over after all that. She, for all she knows, the official story is Giorgio was missing in action and they found her. She's not number one. She's security chief. Like, I don't necessarily think that she would be in on that. So for all she knows, she's going to kick ass with this kick ass lady.
I guess.
Yeah. Yum yum.
Okay. Alright, so the ship is going through the wormhole. They do the motion picture effect of the color kind of dragging off of them as they're going through the wormhole.
I liked that.
That was a great callback. I
belay that or
And the first time, the first time she goes through the wormhole to set the signals, and she the universe flattens into two dimensions, and she goes through the hole. That was beautiful.
That was cool. All right, so then
hang on. I just realized we skipped over another tear jerking moment between Burnham and Spock.
The second goodbye.
Yeah. When she realizes that his shuttle's damaged, he can't follow her, which of course we knew something had to stop him from going.
Right.
And they have that, he admits he's afraid to go on without her, and she tells him to, people are going to reach out to him, find the person who's the most opposite from you and
cleave
to that one.
And let them be your new balance. Because when Spock told him, "You are my balance, Michael," that, ouch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
ouch.
And then when he said, "Now I tried. I wanted my opening thing today to be whatever he said in Vulcan, and no one has it. Even the closed captioning just says he speaks in Vulcan." I was like, "Yeah." but the fact that, more people griping about silly things. I have heard people complaining, why would there be a phrase for I love you in Vulcan? We don't know that's what he said. He may have said something that was like a private thing between the two of them that equated to I love you. And you know, or something like that.
And neural pathways have grown accustomed to
exactly.
your way.
There you go. Exactly.
And that's also an example of how people who complain about that sort of thing, it makes me think that they don't really understand Vulcans and what they are. Vulcans are not emotionless. They just control their emotions, and they push them down, and they put them off to the side. Vulcans feel love. Vulcans feel fear, pain, sorrow. They have all these feelings. They just don't express them in the day-to-day. So if someone were to say, why would Vulcans have a phrase for I love you? Because they feel that. They do that. They can say that whenever they want. They just choose not to very often.
Sarek, and they've said it. I was going to say, Sarek
said it in the 2009 movie. He told Spock, you know, I married your mother because I loved her.
Right.
You know. Okay. So, all right. So they get questioned in San Francisco, and Spock basically says that they need to order that there's no mention of Discovery ever again, or any of the people on Discovery, or the Spore Drive, or any, all of those events need to never be talked about again. So that's
Why?
Kind of,
yeah. Well,
because they promised us that it would be, that canon would line up by the end of the season. I guess this scene is what they're talking about.
I mean, that's great for canon, but it doesn't make any sense that no one can mention Burnham.
Exactly.
She started the Klingon War. She's in the books. Yeah. She's exactly. Like, she wasn't some random, she's not, was it Emmett from Lego Movie? she like, people know who she is. Like, aside from Spock's sister or Sarek's daughter, like, she is a historical figure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, they're in Starfleet. There's records of this. Like, I don't know, did they just cleanse all the records?
They're going to use the flashy thing on everybody.
I think that was mainly for the people who are like, well, how come Sarek and Spock never talk about Michael? Well, okay,
screw those people, because it's exactly. just dumb. It's just dumb to erase yeah. Michael. I understand not wanting to talk about, like, the time travel suit, because that's a dangerous technology.
Sure.
But don't talk about my sister. What?
Yeah.
Why not? I
can even get with Sarek and Spock and the mom, like Amanda saying, we won't mention her outside. Fine. That's a family decision. That's fine. And that's why
Spock don't talk about Cybok, so this is just another name.
Exactly. That's fine. But if you're talking about all of Starfleet records, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. Because if it was just one person, okay, fine. You erase her from all the history books, and she becomes this myth. This one woman started the clean. That's ridiculous. Blah, 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 blah. Flat Earth, blah, 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 blah. Never happened. Man on the moon. Get out of here. But it's a whole crew of people.
Yeah.
And they sent, like, goodbye notes, like, 2 hours ago to all their family.
Yeah. And told them this is what we're doing, and now they're just reporting. Well, the ship was destroyed. And like, well,
I wasn't
yeah.
upset about this till like just now.
Well,
like,
okay.
I thought it was okay. It was like fine because I thought the same. Okay, well there you go. That's why they don't mention her. But it's not maybe I'm misunderstanding, because I hope that that's the case. That it's not just that Spock never mentioned her, because I feel like that's fine. But. Are they all just stricken from the records now?
The thing that my headcanon for all of this, and I've been saying this all along, Discovery it was established at the beginning that Discovery is a test platform for Black Ops systems. So everything that happens aboard Discovery is classified. And that's really all you need to do, is say this incident is classified and move on. But also, what we have here is Lieutenant Spock, who's, what is he, like 25, 26 at this point, saying, yes, we need to, you know, making this recommendation. And the Admiral kind of going, we'll think about that. You run along now. You know, and maybe some aspect of it is I don't think they're going to try to strike Discovery from all Starfleet records. Or if they do, that would just be stupid.
I kind of think that they're just saying that this incident is not to be talked about. I don't think that they can say we're going to pretend like these people never existed. It's like we're just not going to talk about the fact that we're going to tell them that the ship was destroyed, not that it went back in time and we're not, or that it went into the future, and we're just not going to talk about it anymore, so nobody will ask us any questions.
And again, I totally get how easy it is for real things to get turned into myth and legend. So I'm okay with, you know, they had a ship in the 60s that could jump from place to place like that. Like, no, they didn't. That's just dumb.
I love that voice, by the way.
Me and Rick, you and me, Rick.
You get the scene at the very end with on the Enterprise. And, you know, Spock comes in and he's all clean shaven and everything. And then they get the last signal. Michael sent the last signal. I guess she sent the signal through the wormhole as she was coming out the other side or something, because she can't come back. You know, the crystal is burnt out as far as we know. So the one problem that I had, and it's just a story problem as far as the if you take the whole season as one story, the writer in me wants to say you started this season with Michael, you don't need to end it with Pike. You know, you don't need your last scene to be Pike saying hit it. You know, it was Michael's arc. The whole season was Michael's arc. So you started with Michael, you should have ended with Michael. And I know that they don't want to show us the 33rd century, and the main reason for that is because they don't know what's in the 33rd century yet either. They haven't written it yet. So I get why they did that. I was just kind of like, they should have ended it, you know, two scenes ago. But
remember when we first saw the Enterprise and I said that I felt very pandered to and I liked it? This the last 5 minutes of this episode was total complete fan service, and I want to thank them for it. I love that it was everything I wanted to see, and as a send off for the Enterprise, I'm saying, okay, we gave you the Enterprise, we showed you how we did it right for, you know, most of us fans out there, I think. I've already said how much I love this. Neek, did you like the new Enterprise?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan of TOS, so like I'm not that fan who's like, oh, I want to see more of the Enterprise, and yet I also had that moment at the end where I was like, oh, it's so amazing, and so there you go. I was into it. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, them taking a couple of minutes at the end of the show to give us this very loving, send off of the Enterprise, and at the same time, and sorry, Sean, the big f*** you to all of the people whining that it's not in the prime timeline.
He's not sorry, Sean.
They only did it once. You know, with Spock's station and the Moir pattern when he turned it on, mm-hmm. and the viewer, and although I will say, Ethan Peck needs to grow that beard back. He looks 16 without it.
Last week I was like, I wanted to see a clean shaven Spock. I didn't hardly recognize him. He looks so different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I have been seeing a lot on Facebook, and it just like, I eventually had to stop reading comments because it was driving me nuts.
It took you this long to figure that out.
People are saying that because it took 144 days or whatever for the signal to show up, that Discovery only jumped 4 months into the future. And I'm like, every time I read one of these comments, I feel my IQ dropping.
I don't know why. Why is that?
I don't know. Spock even says 144 days for one is a blink of an eye for another. You know, it's just where the signal came out from the wormhole. They jumped 930 years. They didn't jump 4 months. It's just it took that long for the signal to show up.
Yeah, and they verified that the next season, at least part of the season, is going to take place in the 33rd century.
Yeah.
So, and I know Rick, you don't think that there's going to be a Pike led Star Trek show, but they've addressed it and they haven't said they're not doing it.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. All right. Anson Mount said there are no plans for it. He didn't. He said, you know, he'd be down for it. There would have to be creative conversations. You don't just pull a show like that out of the thin air. So you've got two sets and some actors. It takes a lot more than that to have a show. And they've got two shows in between that we know they're doing, the Section 31 show and the next season of Discovery.
And Picard.
Oh, yeah, and Picard. So
officially started filming. Woo!
Yep.
Yeah.
So, as much as I would love a Pike TV show, even if they do it, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not going to be soon.
It was a very loving send off. I love the Enterprise, and I think that they finally did her right as an updating of it. And Pike's, hit it and let's go, and it was beautiful, and I loved it. We are not going to be seeing a Pike show anytime within the next 3 years is my prediction.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take a break. I'm going to if you're listening on the podcast, I'm going to play an ad, let you know some of the other shows that are on the network. If you're watching on YouTube, not going to do that. But let's just pause right here. When we come back, we're going to do speculation for season 3, and we're going to play a game. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Thank you for listening to this program and helping to support the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all of these other great podcasts that we have to offer. On Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast, join Sean, John, Rick, and Virginia as they bring you the latest entertainment news. They've got you covered from Marvel to Star Wars, classic films, TV shows, and everything in between. What is Captain Game Show? It's a lighthearted trivia and wordplay thunderdome. Join John Irons as he plays a game where pop culture knowledge is not enough. You also need to have a black belt in haiku kung fu. For you fans of Star Trek Discovery, we have Discovery After Show. Every week, Sean, Rick, John, and Virginia break down the good and bad of the latest episode of the series. They compare what they're seeing to episodes of the older shows and speculate on things to come. Movie fans will love... Wait, you've never seen... Virginia's taste in film is mostly with the classics and musicals. Her boyfriend Shane loves sci-fi and action. Every week, they watch and review a film that one of them hasn't seen. It might be Die Hard, or it could be Singin' in the Rain. But they're both increasing their film knowledge one movie at a time. If you can't get enough geekery, then you'll want to check out World War G. It's a podcast about all things geek. Troy, AJ, and Colton sit down and talk about the geeky news of the week. They discuss movies, TV, comic books, video games, and occasionally they have a taste test. It's a fun, entertaining podcast if you're a nerd, geek, weirdo, or anything in between. If you're a TV fan, then you'll want to tune in to Trial by Pilot. No one has time to watch every new television show. That's why Bill, Elizabeth, and Casey give their verdict on all the new shows. They judge an entire season of television based solely on the pilot episode. And we do sports, too. Wrestling counts, right? Do you remember the great legends of wrestling from back in the day? Was watching WrestleMania one of the highlights of your childhood? Join Rob and Zach as they watch and review every WrestleMania ever on Review-A-Mania. You can find all of these shows on the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. Visit our website at cosmicpotato.com to find out more. Remember to like what you want and let others do the same.
All right, so speculation. I'll tell you what I think is going to happen in season 3. And one thing, the main thing that I think is going to happen in season 3 is, all right, they're going to the 33rd century. And it's not going to be the 33rd century that Michael's mother saw. It's not going to be a desolate future. It's going to be a populated future where some semblance of the Federation. I don't know if they'll call themselves the Federation or they'll call themselves something else. Are spanned throughout the entire galaxy, all four quadrants. So there's going to be lots and lots of new planets and new aliens for them to meet and all that kind of stuff. And they're going to be kind of a fish out of water. But somehow or another, the ship is going to get pulled back into the 23rd century. Maybe the same reason that Mama Burnham kept getting pulled back into the future. It might get slingshotted back, and the crew is going to get left in the future. The only crew member that's going to stay with Discovery and go back into the past is going to be Georgiou. Because she's got to get back to the past. And then that's going to set off the Calypso stuff, where Discovery becomes sentient over the next 1,000 years, because Georgiou is the one that programs Discovery to kind of hide somewhere for the next 1,000 years and pick up the crew in the future and bring them home. So that's my theory for season 3.
Cute but wrong.
I have no speculation for what we will get, but I know what I want. I don't want. I don't want a revisit of Voyager. I want them in the 33rd century with no intention of coming back, and they just continue their mission instead of having the Gilligan's Island, oh, this one isn't going to work either this week, plot to get back of the week sort of thing. Because that was, I really wanted Voyager to stop trying to get home and just be a Starfleet vessel stuck on the other side of the galaxy exploring. Because every time they hey, this will shave 2,000 years off our, no, it won't, because it can't. Otherwise, the show's over. So that's what I don't want to see them doing.
I don't think that they're going to, I don't think they'll do that. I don't think that they're going to be trying week after week to find a way to get home, just because, well, for one thing, that'll get old. And yeah. I think that they've resigned themselves that they're going to be in the future. One thing that I would like to see is a season that doesn't focus entirely on Michael. I'd like to see a big, I know we get these mini story arcs. We get a Tilly arc for a couple episodes. We get a Stamets arc. I would like to see a big 6 or 7 episode arc that focuses on a different character other than Michael. I don't think Michael needs to be a background character. It's her show. But I think I would like to see the rest of the crew have more focus on some of their stories. Because Michael, I mean, the entire universe rested on her shoulders in this season. And, it was, I don't want to see that happen every single season, because then she's going to become a Christ figure eventually. And I'd rather not see that. I can't take anything that the writers say, because the writers lie as much as J.J. Abrams does about Star Wars.
Love it.
Because Michelle Paradise is one of the writers on this episode, and she came out and she said, it's funny that everybody had all these theories about Control being the Borg, because we never thought of that. I said, yes, you did. You said struggle is pointless. You said the word struggle is pointless. You knew exactly what you were doing.
Yeah, it's impossible to put together the Control storyline without realizing, this kind of sounds like the Borg. And I might be able to buy that they put together the story of Control becoming sentient and developing nanotechnology to carry out its plan, and not have the Borg in your mind while you're putting it together. I can buy that you accidentally happened upon something that was similar to it, but there's no way that you didn't put it together and say, hey, look what we just made. That looks very Borg.
Yeah.
You think people are gonna notice?
They knew they wanted everybody online arguing about whether or not they were the Borg or something,
Or they could have been starting to write Resistance as futile, and someone went, we can't say that. We don't want people thinking this is the Borg. Okay, struggle is pointless. That works.
But as soon as I heard him say struggle is pointless, I was like, yeah, struggle is pointless equals Resistance is futile.
And I don't know how long the process takes to write out the season or in what order they do it, but it's also possible they might have planned for it to be the Borg and then did a course correction in the process of writing and said, it was a nice idea, but let's not do it because too many people are it's going to backfire on us if we try to make this the Borg. So
we're
heading in that direction, but let's not actually follow through with it. Let's not actually make it the Borg. Okay.
I think, and maybe this is super obvious, but I think Poe might have stowed away on the Discovery, because that would explain why she might never have told anybody, but why we don't have recharging dilithium in the 23rd century, and that might solve any power problems they have.
Well, she watched them go.
Oh, she did?
Go, go. Yeah, she was like, go, was go, like, go.
Oh,
yeah, she was rooting for them from her shuttle.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Now, as far as predictions go for next season, I really think that I do not have a workable theory for how Discovery can get sent back in time so we can spend 1,000 years waiting and then be there as Zora in the future. I don't really have a theory for that. But I firmly believe that with the time period they're going to and with the Calypso short trek that we had, I think that one of the, if not the main antagonist, then one of the antagonists that the Discovery crew is going to face off against is the Vedraish that
that's Kraft, the Federation.
Exactly. And that was, I think, was it the writer? Was it Michael Chabon that confirmed that that's what the Federation became? Okay. I think that they're going to get there, and whether they meet Kraft or just meet other people like him, they're going to see that the people of the galaxy are now being, I think it's going to turn out that they're being oppressed and mistreated by this vast galactic spanning organization known colloquially as the Vedraish, and Discovery crew will find out this is what the Federation has become over the past 1,000 years. We got to fix it. And whether or not they actually get back to the 23rd century, I don't know. I kind of hope that they don't. I don't want them to land back in the 23rd century at all. Because while I didn't view it the same way that a lot of the haters on Twitter view it, as saying, this breaks canon, blah, 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 blah. It's undeniable that to have the Spore Drive and that level of technology in the 23rd century and just have it, conveniently not be mentioned or used in, moving forward in the 24th century, it's kind of a tough pill to swallow. They wrapped it up at the end of the season by saying, okay, that technology is gone. Let's not talk about it or use it again. Same thing with the Angel Suit. Let's not talk about it or use it again. Now we have a plausible reason for that sort of thing not being around in the 24th century. They shouldn't mess with it. They did the best that they're ever going to do to try to appease the whiners on Twitter. If they try to go back and undo it and reintroduce Discovery and her crew and her Spore Drive to the 23rd century, it's asking for trouble.
I just don't think it would be a very interesting show, honestly. I mean, canon aside, I give zero shits about canon. I just don't think, we've seen it. Like, we've seen it. We've seen Star Trek. We've seen The Next Generation. We've seen Voyager. We've seen these, this type of person in this type of situation. What I hope for, and I put this on the Facebook page, I hope it basically I hope it becomes like Farscape. I think you're right, Scott. I think the plot that you laid out is entirely plausible, if not probable. But I would like to see some episodic television. I would like to see this fish out of water. We don't know what the galaxy has become, but we're in this, we have this crew unlike any other. We have this ship unlike any other ship. We have this sentient, semi-sentient. It's getting there. It's learning slowly. We've got this, mostly crew, but a couple of rabble rousers on the ship. I want to see that. I want to see Farscape meets TOS. That's what I want, and I think they've got all the ingredients for it.
Just without the Muppets.
You know what? You, Rick. I will edit that one myself. I'm tired of everybody disparaging Muppets. Yoda was a Muppet.
Now, if they're not, at the beginning of the Muppets season,
Stern. Nick, did you have anything that you wanted to?
Well, I agree with John. I would love to see that, and I don't mind if there are Muppets.
Thank you.
What were you saying, Scott?
I think at the beginning of the season, if they want to, they can even start in the season premiere if they want to find a way to send Discovery with, like was already mentioned, with Giorgio back to the 23rd century to hide, then they could reintroduce Zora Discovery in the next episode without too much trouble. And that could also allow Giorgio to jump ship, so she will be available for whenever they want to start the Section 31 series. Which
because for the crew...
What's that?
Because for the crew, it could be instantaneous. I mean, you know...
Yeah. Exactly. And they could
show up before it leaves.
They could send Discovery away. They could send Discovery away and then literally turn around and there's Zora standing behind him saying, "Sorry, I'm late."
All right. We're going to... Okay. We're going to do a giveaway. A Discovery era badge replica pin. I've chosen four people that left five-star reviews on our Apple Podcast page, a.k.a. iTunes. And since we have five players on the show, I also picked another person from the Facebook group that has participated a lot and made a lot of comments on the page. So we have five people to play for, and you guys are going to be the champions for those participants, for those contestants. So, Rick, you're going to be playing for Tom Corcoran.
Woot!
John, you're going to be playing for Matt Zubka.
Cool.
Virginia, you're going to be playing for Darren Loki or Losi. I think it's Losi. Scott, you're going to be playing for Ollie Peters. And Neek, you're going to be playing for Bulent Bingo.
Ooh, the pressure's on.
And what we're going to do, we're going to play the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Okay, good. Because I was like, is this Star Trek trivia? I'm just done.
No. I started to come up with my own Star Trek version of rhyme casting, but I didn't have enough time. So the Rotten Tomatoes game, for the people listening that haven't played, and for Neek, because I know you've never played before, I'm going to name a movie, and it's going to be a movie that starred or featured a person that was on this season of Discovery, and you guys are going to tell me what you think the critic score is on Rotten Tomatoes, and you can also tell me what you think the audience score is. So if you get if you're the closest to the critic score, then you'll get a point. If you're the person that gets that point and your audience score is within five, you'll get another point. Okay? But your audience score only counts if you actually get the point for the critic score. So I'll name a movie and you guys tell me what you think the critic score is, and I'll go around the table here. So first off, from 2016, Anson Mount was in a movie called Marvel's Inhumans. And I know it's a TV show, but the first episode was theatrically released, so it counts. Rick, what do you think the critic score was for Marvel's Inhumans?
I'm going to give it a generous 21%. And fan score, I'm going to say that they were a little bit kinder and give it a 23.
All right. John, what do you think?
Critics, 18. Fans, 12.
All right. Neek, what do you think?
Critics, 27. Fans, 46.
Okay. Scott?
Critics, 25. Fans, 14.
All right, Virginia.
I will say critics 10, fans 20.
I have a question.
Okay.
So if some, am I not allowed to pick the exact same number somebody else? I have to go up one or more, one or down one.
Yeah, because I can't give you both a point if you get it right.
I don't know why you can't. But all right, that's why I was asking.
All right, the actual critic score was 11. Dope. So Virginia gets that point. But Virginia, your audience score wasn't close enough. The audience score was 45, so
you get
1 point for getting the critic score right. So, okay, the second one is from 2005. It was a film that had Michelle Yeoh in it. It was called Memoirs of a Geisha. Rick, what do you think the critic score was?
That one, I'm remembering right, critics really liked that one. So I'll say that one's a 97. No, that's a little too high. 87. And then fan score will be 90.
All right, John?
Yeah, I agree. Critics liked it. And I think Rick's actually pretty close. I'm going to say I'll go down a little bit. You said 87. I'll go 83. And fans, 94.
All right. Neek?
Critics, 86. Fans, 80.
All right, Scott?
Took my fan score.
You can do the same fan score as long as you change up your critic score.
Yeah, you can do the same fan score.
Okay. Let's... I don't want to do the same one. So I'm going to do it in the reverse order. Fan score, just so I can be different, I'm going to say 81. It's like The Price is Right. I'm going to just bump it up one. And critic score, I remember from my old, if I'm still thinking of the right movie, I remember from back in the days when I was, working in like, video stores and whatnot. I don't think it was quite as loved as all that. I'm going to say critic score, say 60%.
Okay. What about you, Virginia?
And fan score 81.
Critics 92, fans 89.
Okay. You guys are remembering the movie wrong because the critics didn't like it. The critic score was 35.
Ouch!
What?
Yeah.
Wasn't it nominated?
The closest was Scott, because he had 60. So he gets the point for being closest on critic score. The audience score was 83, so you came within 5, so you get another point. You get 2 points for that. Okay. We're going to do 5 of these. So the third one is... I have another one in case there was a tie, but we'll see. 2005, Anthony Rapp was in a movie called Rent. Rick, what do you think the critic score was for Rent?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, I hate this show so much. I don't remember how well the movie did.
He's talking about this podcast.
I'm talking about Rent the play. One of the most overrated musicals in history. In my opinion. I'm going to say the critics was 79 and the fans were 90.
All right, John?
35 and 50. Critics 35, fans 50. Okay. Actually, I'll bump up fans. I'll say fans... 67.
All right. Neek?
Critics, 53. Fans, 66.
All right. Scott?
Critics, 70. Fans, 45.
And Virginia?
Critics, 84. Fans, 87.
All right. Actual retail price. The critic score was 46.
Yo! So
that actually...
That's me, right?
Neek. No, Neek was closer. You said 35, which was 11 away. Neek said 53, which is only 7 away. So Neek got that point. But the audience score was 83. So Neek gets 1 point for that. Okay, 2004, Rebecca Romijn was in a film called The Punisher. Now, this is The Punisher that had John Travolta and Thomas Jane in it. Rick, what do you think the critic score was for The Punisher?
Critic score 10. Fan score 15.
All right. John?
It's actually really close to what I was going to say. Let me think. You said the critic score was 10?
Yeah.
I'll drop. I'll say critic score... No, I'll go up. I'll say 12. Fan score... 9.
Okay. Neek?
Critics 13, fans 20.
All right. Scott?
I'm going to say critics 25. Maybe I like the movie more than most people. I'm giving it a little bit more credit, I think. Critics 25, fans 35.
All right, in Virginia.
Critics 18 and fans 28.
All right. Scott was the closest. The critic score was 29. So Scott gets that point. The audience score was 63, so he went close enough on that.
Wow.
Okay.
Audiences like that a lot more than I expected.
Yeah.
The audience didn't hate it as much as you guys thought they did.
That was back before we started getting Marvel movies and people saw what could actually
true.
What a superhero movie could actually look like.
I think people enjoyed John Travolta playing a villain with his best Nicolas Cage insanity.
All right. 2017, Doug Jones was in a movie called The Shape of Water. Rick, what was the critic score of The Shape of Water?
That was such a wonderful movie. I know. Oh, wow. That's tricky. That one could have gone either way with the critics. I never looked it up. I'm going to say 89 for the critics and 95 for fans.
Stop taking my numbers, Rick.
All right, John, what do you think?
I'll go up. I'll say 92 and 93.
All right. Neek?
93 and 94.
All right, Scott.
Can you recap the critic scores so far?
The critic scores, Rick said 89, John said 92, and Neek said 93.
All right. Critic score 90. Fan score 95.
All right, Virginia?
I'm going to say critics 78 and fans 83.
All right. John was right on the money at 92. So John gets the point, but your audience score was off. The audience score was 73.
Wow.
Palestinians.
all right. So, you know what? I had a tiebreaker. There's not a tie. So let's go ahead and do the tiebreaker just so I can mark it off. 1991. Jane Brooke was in a movie called Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
I was hoping you were going to go with Kindergarten Cop.
Rick, what do you think the critic score was for that? No, she was young. Oh, I don't remember the character she was.
Was she the daughter? Sister? Whatever?
No, she was not in the main group. She was a secondary character.
Okay. I know nothing about this film other than I've heard the title.
It wasn't bad. Actually.
I'll say critics gave it a 50 and fans gave it a 52.
All right. John, what do you think?
I will say critics gave it a 35. Fans gave it a 75.
All right. Neek?
Critics 60, fans 80.
All right, Scott.
I'm going to bank on critics not loving it and say 25. I'm going to bank on a little bit of cult status and say 65.
All right, and Virginia.
I'm going to say critics 45 and fans 73.
All right. John was the closest. The critic score was 33. And the audience score, you weren't close enough on the audience score. The audience score was 56. So,
it was fine.
Scott wins the game with 3 points. So that means that Ollie Peters is going to be getting the Star Trek Discovery replica badge pin. So, Ollie.
We did it, Ollie!
Yeah, reprobate doesn't deserve it.
I'll be contacting you on Facebook so you can give me your mailing address and I will get that out to you sometime in the next couple weeks. All right, so Black Alert, I'm going to activate the Spore Drive, jump us out of this episode. I want to remind you guys that this is officially the end of Discovery After Show. Within the next couple of weeks, I'm going to rebranding the show with our new title. We're going to be called The Landing Party.
We're getting branded again?
Don't act like you didn't like it, Rick.
We're changing the name because we're going to be covering the Picard series, and we're going to be covering the Section 31 series and all that. And,
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks. Yeah, but I don't know if Lower Decks is going to constitute doing a weekly episode breakdown. But we will cover it. But we're going to cover stuff more than Discovery. So Discovery After Show doesn't, contain everything that we're going to be talking about. So we're going to change it to The Landing Party. But don't unsubscribe from this feed because it's going to be the same feed. You're just going to notice that the title is going to change sometime in the next month or so. There is talk. We're talking about maybe getting together next month when the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind, comes out and do an episode about that. So we will be coming back. And, eventually Quentin Tarantino is supposed to direct that Star Trek movie. So we got to get together and talk about that. So Rick can rage quit. But you'll be able to find out everything that you need to know on the Facebook group, which I'm hoping to change the name if Facebook lets me.
They won't.
If they don't, we may... starting a new group. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me change the Starbase to Starbase The Next Generation, and I even said it's the same show, just a new name. No. We can't be sure. You're not changing everything. It's like, oh, whatever.
Was it a group or just a page?
It was just a group.
Okay, because yeah. I've seen some groups change to something. There was a Star Trek group that I was in that all of a sudden changed to like a news group. Had nothing to do with Star Trek, and I was like, you can do that? Okay. Well, I'm out.
Yeah.
Come to our website at cosmicpotato.com and you'll be able to find out everything you need to know. And you'll also hear some other great shows like the one that Virginia is on, which is Virginia.
Wait, you've never seen, which if you love the Muppets, John and me, we just did an episode about the Muppet movie.
I enjoyed that episode.
Find on cosmicpotato.com. I'm so glad you did.
I don't hate the Muppets.
I learned a lot about the Muppets, like how Kermit rode that bike. That was really cool. So you can find us at waityouveneverseen.com or on cosmicpotato.com, and we watch movies and TV shows that one of us has never seen and then talk about it.
And Rick, you've got a network?
I do. It's the Infinite Diversity Network, and I've got 3 shows on it right now. That's Starbase The Next Generation, Open the Iris, which is our Stargate SG-1 podcast, and Infinite Diversity, where I talk to people who are in some way connected to Star Trek, either fans or worked on the show or something like that, who are bringing diversity and light and wonderfulness into the world so that we can get some more positivity out there. So check them out.
All right. And John, you have something that you work on.
I do. I host Captain Game Show. It is a trivia wordplay game show on the network. If you go to Apple Music or whatever, they'll go back about like 35 episodes. But if you want to hear them all, you can go to the Cosmic Potato Network. Last year, in addition to the regular game, I also did a hidden game. that where I dropped clues in various episodes for a grand finale, and
there were blue paw prints everywhere.
Yeah, the winner of that, the person who successfully solved the clues, actually will be on not the show that I'm releasing this week, but the show that I'm releasing next week. I invited him on to play, and I will also. That would also be the start of this year's Hidden Game, which will I'll add in post, so none of the people who actually played the game, they don't get a head start. Everybody will hear it when the episode comes out. So I hope that it causes as much grief this year as it did last year.
Hard to imagine. All
right. And Scott, you've got a new show that you're starting soon, right?
Yep. If I remember correctly, at the end of this week is going to be the recording of the first episode of the relaunch of the Prime Direction, where we will have a one-on-one interview with either a Star Trek fan or hopefully eventually people who are involved in some way with Star Trek. The previous iteration of the podcast had DeForest Kelly's longtime personal friend and biographer, had Michael Jan Friedman of many a New York Times bestselling Star Trek novel, and one of the performers from Star Trek Continues, am I right?
No, two of them.
Yes.
Had two, Vic Mignogna, right. And Michelle Yeoh were on. Michelle Speck. Yeah, I wish Michelle Yeoh had been on the show.
I forgot that Vic was on there. So two people from Star Trek Continues, and hopefully some more actual Star Trek people, but a whole lot of fans. Twitter is full of them. So it's going to be deep dive one-on-one conversations to talk about the their history, their personal history with Star Trek, and the effect that it has had on their lives. It was a great show when the old host was doing it.
Who
you calling old?
Weird. I loved the show when Sean was hosting it, and I'm excited for the opportunity to take the wheel and revive it and bring it back. So we'll be recording the first episode of that within the next week, and I would expect to see that premiere episode sometime in the month of May.
That guest you've got on the first episode, though, is terrible. I don't know why you wouldn't want to talk to him.
I'm forcing myself. It's a penance, really.
Yeah.
It's a penance. And although I will say, speaking of Muppets, we're talking about people who like Muppets, people who don't like Muppets. Show of hands, does anyone have a Muppet tattooed on their body?
Do I have a Muppet?
Oh, okay.
My Muppet has a tattoo of me. Does that count?
And listeners, in case you didn't get it, I'm going to be the first guest on the Prime Direction. But all right. And Neek, let everybody know where they can find you online.
Well, first of all my tattoos are Star Trek related. And you can find me, my Star Trek recaps, at superanemic.com. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram as superanemic.
All right. And I want to thank everybody for supporting the first season that we've done of this show here on the Cosmic Potato Network. I hope to we hope to bring you this show for as long as CBS is cashing in on Star Trek. So please come visit us on the site. And also you can hear me if you want to hear me and some of the other people here on the program. We do a podcast called Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, where we talk about other stuff besides Star Trek. We talk about Doctor Who, and we talk about Marvel and Star Wars and classic movies and stuff like that. So,
and also Star Trek.
Yeah, sometimes Star Trek. So come and join us there. And until then, I lost my place in my notes with my closing quote. Always remember, sometimes we know the podcast we're meant to play, sometimes we don't. I'm not sure which is better, to be honest. That was a quote from this episode. Yeah.
I thought you were going to drop some Sun Tzu.
Thank you for joining us for Discovery After Show. Your feedback is welcome.
leave us a comment and review on Apple Podcasts. Join our group on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. You can email us at mail@cosmicpotato.com or send us a voicemail or text message to 205-642-8380. The views and opinions stated on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of CBS, Paramount Pictures, or their sponsors. Star Trek Discovery is owned by CBS and has no affiliation with the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network or this program. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next week as we analyze another episode of Star Trek Discovery here on Discovery After Show.